He comes behind, he's taking the next one.
Yes.
It's 1:32 p.m. We've got a long agenda and a short amount of patience. So, those present at the meeting, councilpersons Kilpatrick, Retta, Bell, Street, Weiner, Hollins, Cartier, Diller, Retta, Smiley, Bullock. What's your pleasure on the minutes? Motion to approve the minutes of previous meetings. There a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Grab a seat, Bob, wherever you want. Councilman Powers is now present with us.
Oh, thanks.
As soon as somebody takes a call from the McMahon, find out whether they hit the money or not. Councilman Red is with us. Okay, we're going to go out of order briefly as a courtesy, extended a courtesy to come in and allow the new county executive to address council briefly to introduce three, temporary full-time appointments, whatever they are. Okay, floor is open. Going.
What's he yelling about?
2 minutes.
We'll fit him in the agenda when we can. Okay, we have the external auditor's presentation of the June 30, 2012. Are they here? Okay, moving right along. R-12-170, amend the capital budget, increase appropriations by $76,000 for the information systems expansion project in order to implement a smart 911 system for the 911 call center. Councilman Bell or Councilman Street, and I understand there's a speaker or two as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, with the chair's permission, 12-170 and 12-118 coincide with one another because one is to increase the appropriation and the other one is actually to authorize the expenditure of the funding for a special smart 911 system project.
Do you want to consider your comments as addressing both at this time?
Could we please?
Okay.
Yeah, I think that would be good. I don't want to elaborate too much on it. We have Dave Roberts, our Chief of Emergency Communications, as well as Mr. Maroli, who is a citizen who had a situation that occurred at his home and had a great loss to his family due to a lack of this type of technology that could have helped. So I guess what I will say, and I pride myself in being a former chief of the 911 Emergency Communications, is we always talk about another tool in the toolbox. What Smart 911 can bring to New Castle County, and eventually we hope the entire state of Delaware, is an enhancement of the existing 911 system, the existing database, and eventually interface to provide real-time information to not only the call operator and to the dispatcher, but the officers responding. And it's a voluntary type system, but this database will allow officers as they're arriving or en route to receive information firsthand by choice of a resident to have in a database that may help intervene in a situation that's going on at a home. Someone could be home alone and not be able to come to the door. This particular system will allow us to capture a database that will enhance our emergency services to the citizens of the county. So with that, with your permission, I'd like to ask Chief Dave Roberts to give a brief overview. And then, as you stated, we also have a gentleman from the manufacturer of the system that is actually here today to address the system.
Just as a matter of housekeeping, those of you that may be new to the committee process, if you're recognized and rise to speak, please give your name before speaking, title, if appropriate, and that applies each time you rise to speak so that we'll match and coordinate with the tape that's being made. Chief Roberts.
Thank you. Dave Roberts, Chief Emergency Communications Center. Thank you for the opportunity to be before you today to, as the councilman pointed out, to introduce a new tool that we're looking to put into the public safety department. The Public Safety Department, in conjunction with our police department, has looked at this. We see this as a very vital enhancement to the system. It's giving us the ability to expand on some of the systems that we have, already have in place. We have a premise history file within our computer-aided dispatch system that allows us to capture minimal information, nowhere near what you'll be able to see when you get the demonstration for the Smart 911. We have worked with the state. There's a state registry. If you ride up and down the road, you see 911 registry.org. What we've experienced is that's a very limited, also in the way that it captures the data and how it's presented into the communication center. We have in Newcastle County worked with the state to incorporate their system and have the data automatically go into the 911 database when a call is received from an address, because that's all address driven, as our premise history file is. What you're going to see here is a expansion upon that, where the information will be driven by telephone numbers, house numbers for landlines and everything. So without getting a lot into that, I'm going to introduce Todd Miller, who's from the Rave Mobile. He represents Smart 911, and he'll give a brief presentation, then I can answer any questions after that. Todd?
Thank you. Todd Miller, Vice President of Public Safety Services from Rave Mobile Safety. I will certainly keep the overview brief, but did want to provide you with an opportunity to learn a little bit more about Smart 911 and what some of the challenges are today in public safety. The reality is, if any one of us today in this room were to call 911 today from our mobile phone or from our home number, this is pretty much all public safety would know about us. There's really not a whole lot of information that is shared with an inbound 911 call. You'll get the phone number, maybe some form of location information, but that's just about it. And certainly there can be challenges when it comes to making those 911 calls that may prevent an individual from being able to effectively communicate. They may have a disability that would prevent them from sharing pertinent information. They may be having a health issue that may prevent them from exchanging the right amount of information. And so what Smart 911 does is allows individuals to opt in and share additional critical safety profile information with 911 public safety officials. So for example, we can, with that inbound call, without a word said, share that this is not an open air call. This is not a call where someone is accidentally dialed. This is actually a deaf or hard of hearing individual that's calling. Or this is an individual that has a history of heart problems. Or we can immediately know entry and exit points, locations of emergency shutoffs, all sorts of information that can improve the 911 call taking process and put critical information into the hands of first responders that can actually make a difference. What you see there on the right hand side is what we call the Smart 911 profile viewer. That is actually what is shown to 911 officials with an inbound call. And I'll just walk briefly through the types of information that we can provide. We can provide photos and physical descriptions. So some of you in the room have heard me talk before. I talk a lot about my kids. I've got two small children myself, a three-year-old and a six-year-old. And if either one of my children were to go missing today, typical standard operating procedures in most parts of the country, I'll call 911, I'll report that my son Carson is missing, and they'll send an officer out to my household. And that officer will ask for a physical photo. They'll probably take a spin around my neighborhood to make sure Carson's not out and about, but eventually they'll bring it back to the police department where at that point can be scanned in and then distributed to first responders or to the news media. Maybe an Amber Alert is done. But the reality is, even under the best case scenario, when everything goes correctly, that process can take 30, 60, 90 minutes or more. And one of the things that's been highlighted by the Center for Missing and Exploited Children is that the faster that you can get that photo and physical description into the hands of first responders, the better your chances are of returning that child safely. And so now instantly, you can have the photo and physical description not only of myself and my wife, but also of my two children from any of our phone numbers. Whether we call from a home landline, my mobile number, her mobile number, doesn't matter. We can also include health and medical information. So knowing these types of details in advance can dramatically improve the overall end-to-end public safety response. it's oftentimes not known that someone has a disability until first responders arrive. And at that point, they may realize that there's special equipment required or additional personnel required to facilitate that rescue. And knowing that only when you arrive slows down the response and can have adverse results, we can provide that information with the inbound 911 call. We can also include household details, like a true dispatchable address. When you call from your mobile phone today, and chances are if you were home and you had an emergency later this afternoon, you're probably going to call from the phone that's in your pocket or in your purse. 70% of the calls that come into 911 today nationwide are from mobile phones. That's growing. And when you call from that mobile phone, you're only going to get an approximate address, especially if you live in a neighborhood where the houses are packed tightly together, or maybe you're in an apartment complex, a condo complex. It's going to say you're somewhere in the vicinity. It's not going to tell you that you're in, say, 13 Lilac Circle. We can share that home address. We can share that work address so that you can have that information made available immediately. Number of occupants, locations of emergency shutoffs, bedroom locations. My safety profile, for example, highlights that my children's bedrooms are on the second floor. Kyle's on the left, Carson's on the right. I make a special note that my son Carson still sleeps in a crib. It's important for me to share because obviously he's not going to be able to rescue himself. But maybe I have a elderly parent that lives with me that has some mobility restrictions. I want to be able to share that information so that the right personnel come with the right equipment. Then we also do some unique things on location. Today, if you were to call 911 and for whatever reason your mobile phone call ended, you ended the call taker accidentally ended the call, maybe your attacker grabbed the phone and hung it up. At that point, 911's ability to continue getting your location from your mobile phone actually ends. It's not like what you see on CSI, it's not like what you see in the James Bond movies. They are unable to continue getting your location from your mobile phone. In many cases, we're able to continue providing that information. We also implemented a tool that was designed in conjunction with the deaf and hard of hearing community. The challenge today with the deaf and hard of hearing community is that oftentimes their calls are thought to be open air calls. They're not able to effectively verbally communicate. And so I work personally with the state of Arkansas to roll out Smart 911 across the entire state. And the Arkansas Association of the Deaf played a very large role in that. And what I heard consistently were the challenges from the deaf and hard of hearing community. My friend Julianne Chavez, who works with the Arkansas Association of the Deaf, called me one day in tears. Working with a translator, she was able to explain to me that she had just called 911 and was hung up on because she wasn't able to communicate. We can instantly tell 911 that this is a deaf and hard of hearing community member and offer a new way to communicate with them. And then we can also deliver that information out to the field. We can put that photo in physical description. We can put that household location information. We can put information about how to access the household all in the hands of your first responders instantly. And one of the things that we've seen as we've rolled this out across 27 states now in total, Arkansas being the very first one to roll it out statewide, but it is available in 350 communities like Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Georgia, Seattle, Washington, and also my smaller communities. One of the things that we've consistently heard is that having more information provided with that inbound 911 call can have a very, very positive result. And that's why we've gotten such great coverage, and the communities that have brought this technology to their citizens have also gotten such goodwill, such positive responses from the community. So that's the brief overview. I certainly could go into more detail, but I know you've got a packed agenda today.
Questions from your members of council? Councilman Warren.
Yeah, more of a comment. And, of course, you're aware that I've invited Maroli family representative here. I want to share this with the members of county council. Tragically, a year ago, a lady died in her house in my community. And the woman was able to dial 911, but she was not able to communicate. And by the time EMS public safety folks got to the house, there was no one responding at the door. And they went around, checked the windows, did everything that our protocols call for. Nothing seemed out of order. So Nothing was unlocked, so they left. And tragically, this woman died. And the Morali family asked, why wasn't more done? You know, and so we went through the whole analysis of, should they have broken in? And of course, there are legal liabilities and concerns and protocols about that. And most people would not have preferred that the police had broken in. But then the Morali family, and I put them in contact with Dave Roberts and with Chief McLaren and his people, and they began to work through an alternative. And that was the smart 911 system. Then they had a second battle. They had to go to Dover and get funding. And what Chief McLaren told me was, the state sometimes, they look at our county police and we make requests and it's the same old, same old. The fact that an extended Morali family and their friends were lobbying in Dover with them made the difference to getting the funding and approvals for this. And with that in mind, I wanted you to hear not from the husband, who's not here, but he was at our last council meeting, but from the son, Joe Morali, who's here today. If we could just have a few minutes for him to speak.
Thank you. I'm Joe Morali, citizen, obviously the son of Gracie Morali, who a year and a half ago passed away. Fortunately, we showed up at the house and found my mom passed away on the, you know, in the upstairs office. Ended up, you know, the phone was at the side of her. 911 was displayed, you know, right there on the cordless handset, just dropped right out of her hand. And 911 responders were there within minutes. They knocked on the door, they walked around, looked around, and everything seemed okay. There's no break-in, no nothing. And, you know, there was nothing, I guess, that they saw that was wrong. So eventually we, you know, after things settled down with that, we went over to, you know, talk with Scott McLaren and tried to figure out what was going on. Well, you know, you got a 911 call that comes from somebody's house. Why don't you do anything? You know, you knock on the door, but it's just nothing happens. I mean, obviously a call came from there for some reason, but, you know, the protocol showed that, you know, you can't break down a door because if you don't know, if there's no visible sign, you just don't know. So we kind of accepted that as, you know, okay, well, what can we do about it? And what we kind of figured out was maybe if people register that say, you know, I have a history of something going on, or, you know, my mom is elderly, and if somebody calls 911 from there, we don't have any pets, there's nobody that's going to be, you know, doing this accidentally, do something about it. Or if you can't do anything about it, maybe you can reach out to some contact information for a family member and get that information. Well, I'm finding out there was no way for 911 to take any of this information in. So we started, you know, asking community members, and I've got about 1,000 petitions here within about just the first month that say, look, 911, there is a need for this. Somebody, you got to have some way for, you know, if somebody makes a call, that you got to have an alternate contact information. Just don't go knock on the door and leave. Maybe make a phone call. Where do you get that number from? This 911 registry thing is a fix for that. That's how you can get that number. Right, that information would pop up and it would, you know, you could make a phone call if family. Hey, we just received a 911 call here, just to let you know. You know, all right, well, you know what, my mom is there. You know, I know she's there. I just talked to her 10 minutes ago. Something's going on. I'll be right there, or I'll go in and knock down the door. You know, there's something that needs to be done about that. I know there's thousands of 911 hang-up calls, as I've been able to see the logs with Chief Dave Roberts. You know, you can't break every call, every door down, but you know, if you've got some information, some more information, and you get it instantly, you can make that phone call. And how are you going to get that information? Well, right now, there's not really a way to do that. So I'm supporting it. We've got petitions here, handwritten, signed. You know, we went door to door, knocking on people's door, and said, look, there's no way for people to do this right now. So with that, you know, I'm really supportive of 911. The whole family is supportive of the smart 911 system, and hopefully we can get this system in place to make a difference here to save somebody else. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
How do we propose getting this information? Like, what type of campaign would we have to?
Dave Roberts, Chief of Communications. Councilwoman, that's the hard part. That's our challenge, because what we need to do is, and with this system that we're purchasing, comes a whole information package and a PR press releases and everything that we'll get out. But we really need to get it out to the public. We're very fortunate. The Maroli family has championed this. They've met with AARP. They've met with a lot of individuals. And we thank them for the support that they've given to the 911 center on getting even people to register with the 911 registry, which provides a limited amount of data. It's going to be our jobs, mine, yours, everybody, to get this out to the public and get the people to register. The national average, I believe, is like within the first year, you probably only have about 5 to maybe 10% of the citizens register. But if we can get out to get that information out to our most critical senior citizens, you know, the deaf community, the different organizations to get them into here, it's going to make a difference. It's going to save somebody's life. I think we know, we recognize that. You know, I mean, would Mr. Morley's situation change if we'd have had that information that his mother had, you know, some type of condition or something? Sure, it would have. It would have made a big difference. So this is, like Councilman said, this is another tool we're adding to the toolbox that's allowing us to provide the first responders, whether it be police, fire, EMS, with additional information.
Okay, I have a question, and then I'm going to make an off-the-cuff smart comment.
Okay.
This is my way. Would I, when this is in, would I go online and enter my information, scan my family pictures? How does that work?
I think that, and that's one of the important things. You can do that today. You can go on the Smart 911, register your phones. If the 911 center that you're making the call into has this ability to accept the information, that information will go with you across the country.
I've registered mine.
Through Smart 911?
Through our system, whatever we have. But, like, he's showing the pictures and stuff.
Yes.
Would I do that? If this ballooned up,
yes.
My concern, I mean, it's good. I'm supporting it. Would it overwhelm the 911 center, or is this something each individual does from home?
It is based on the individual providing the information into the system. It's your responsibility to put as much information in there or as little information as you would like. Within every 6 months, you'll get an email from them or a notification from the Smart 911 that you need to update your data. And is it a year, Todd? If you don't update it within a year, it comes out of the system. You're notified of that initially when you put the information in, so that we're not getting bad information. So it's based on the individual providing that information.
And one good way to make sure everybody got notified and stood up and took attention is, you know, the press would publish that council's considering a additional property tax to fund it. I'm sure we'd hear from people and they'd be aware of it.
I think Council.
Well, one of my suggestions, just sitting here thinking of this, is that maybe we could work, and I don't know who we is, but maybe we can work through, like, the pharmacies, and as you get a prescription, at least for maybe the first year or so, that just a sheet goes in your prescription bag saying that we have this. I mean, I'm thinking property taxes, that doesn't hit everybody, driver's license. I mean, there's just all sorts of ways, but it just seems to me that sometimes through a pharmacy or something, there's probably nobody that doesn't use a pharmacy at some point.
Yeah, I mean, we can use it all. I know as council members, we reach out to our communities, put it on their websites, put it in their newsletters. So, yeah. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would agree. I think that we have a wealth of networks available within our own county. If you take a look at our emergency services alone, our police, fire, and medical services, our emergency management, there's fund drive letters that go out. There's ambulance billing that goes out. We've got, from the fire department standpoint, fire safety education, things that they do with the public and everything in the stations, and smoke detectors. Our police services, as we know, and you've arranged for some of the presentations for 7:40 for them to come in and speak to the community groups. And so I think that we've got to call upon, bring together, facilitate all of our resources to educate the public, to get folks involved, and to let them know what it could mean to their loved ones and everything.
And I guess off the top of my head, if we had a designated informational website where we could do a massive reverse 911 calling saying, here's a new county program,
suggest you go to this site, take a look at it.
Just all of those are viable options for us to take and get this information out.
I'd say, you know, we could advertise it at the Eagles game, but not got enough people to see it. So.
I just have a question about institutions. For example, the Stirk School is in my district, and they do have kids who are there. It's a residential facility. Now, you know, with a nursing home, I mean, I don't know how that would work, but, you know, when you've got, how does it work with a residential facility with the system?
Where there's multiple residents within one location, it's individual based, so it's telephone. It's connected to a telephone number, either a landline or a mobile.
Okay.
So that's how that we would actually get the information.
Right.
I think, you know, one of the things that's really important about the system is the security that's provided mm-hmm. within it. Even I, as the 911 center, could not go in and look at your information if you put it in until you call me. Once you call into the 911 center for a service, that information then becomes available to us. So I think that the security that's provided with this, we talk about next generation 911 and video and pictures and being able to, you know, relay as much information out to the first responders. This is the perfect first step for us to be able to do that.
Councilman Powers and Councilman Clay.
I think part of it, you may have answered part of my question. One of them is with the information, I mean, partly because I had a problem within my district recently, is they could put where a key is to open the door.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Because I think I learned in this that some of them have told the fire companies where the keys are, and then somebody still busted in the door. So I'm not laughing about it. I'm just meaning, you know, the complaint to me was they busted in the door.
Yeah.
So
that is information that could be provided. And the other thing is
Some of it's being said to some of the fire companies, but it's not being put out.
It's not being put out there to everyone. And it's hit or miss if the fire company, if the person on the first responding unit is aware of that.
Yes, and that's where the problem
is. Sure.
Councilman Cartier.
I know this could be very valuable to our senior citizens. Yes. And I had a question about, you know, a lot of our seniors are not very familiar with going on the internet, using email, logging data over the internet. Is there a way that we would be able to accumulate data from people simply making a phone call to us on a landline? And
sure, I can certainly tell you. So I've heard a lot of wonderful ideas here, and you all are on the absolute right track. So a couple things I'd like to add. One, we see this as a partnership. We have some real expertise in this area in terms of community outreach. You've touched on some really great items also. So we are going to work with you to identify all the great ways. And some of those ways are working with senior centers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, establishing days for the seniors to come in and have someone walk them through the process. You also have the ability to register your family members. There is a confirmation process that you go through, so the numbers do have to be confirmed within the system. You'll actually have to be in possession of it. That's one of the ways that we prevent any fraud or mischief from occurring. But if you had an elderly parent, for example, you would have the ability to work with them to register their information also.
So they need, from what I take, you need to access the system, you know, through the internet.
That's right, and you want that as a community. You want that for a variety of reasons. There are terms of use that those citizens go through when they register that acknowledge that when they make a 911 call, they may or may not be in an area that's covered by Smart 911. That's important. They also acknowledge that the information may or may not be used in the course of the call. That's also very important, just from a liability protection standpoint. So you do want users to register. The other important point that I do want to stress also, though, if I didn't mention before, is that this becomes a nationwide database. What that means is when your community members register and they go to any of the other 350 plus communities that have this today across the United States and they dial 911 asking for help, those communities are going to be able to help your citizens even better also.
Okay, Councilman Warren.
Yes, just thinking out loud with everyone else. Do you go to the National League of Cities and National Association of Counties to advertise?
We haven't thus far, but that's a good way to do that, isn't it?
You should get one of the booths there because you're going to meet a lot of folks. Plus, you'll get in there newspapers that go to every elected city and county official in the country.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion. The Arkansas Association of Counties played a critical role in bringing it across the state, and that's been a suggestion that they made, too, is getting more involved with those county organizations.
Council President Bullock.
If the system fails, what's the backup?
Well, that's one of the reasons why there are terms of use that citizens have to acknowledge. Right? We've been in business for 8+ years. We've been doing Smart 911 for about 3 years now. We are only in the public safety business. And so we've constructed our architecture and our infrastructure to be there when it's needed. In fact, we provide emergency notification to 600+ colleges and universities. And as you can imagine, we had Superstorm Sandy come through several weeks ago, and the infrastructure received a tremendous amount of traffic, but we've built up that infrastructure to be able to withstand that. But we've also provided the city and the county with protection in terms of how it gets used in case there is any non-use of the system.
Councilman Bell?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. With advancement in technology, with the provision of enhancement in our 911 system, and being the first in the state is always good. But as everyone knows, Jay and I communicate on a regular basis with our public safety managers. There's some things that we all need to realize, and I know Chief Roberts can address it, but being the first, this would be limited to Newcastle County in the state of Delaware. And so when we look at the city of Wilmington and the city of Newark being their own 911 centers, and if a call does not hit the tower site to go into Newark or Wilmington, it defaults to Newcastle County. So with the advanced technology, it certainly is an enhancement for the citizens of Newcastle County. But if we really truly want to make this work in the future, we need to reach out to our partners in public safety in the city of Newark, and to the state of Delaware, and say this shouldn't just be for a certain area. This should be countywide, citywide. And the first piece of this, we're prepared to begin to put in place. I know that Chief Roberts is already talking to the 911 Executive Board on a state level. These are things in the future from a standpoint of enhanced 911 billing that we all pay into now, that some of that funding should go towards enhancing and providing some of this futuristic technology. And so just want everyone to know, and Dave and I have had a lengthy conversation about this, is that, you know, we're going to have folks that this is not immediately available to, okay, and we should be concerned about that. You know, we can only do so much from the county perspective and getting the first phase in, but we have an obligation to make sure that this is also implemented in the city of Wilmington and the city of Newark. And I think that we need to reach out to folks. The other thing that I want to mention, and you know, we have a vendor here, and as with any vendor, when Enhanced 911 first came aboard, it took a while to get it nationwide. And there are still areas of our country that don't have Enhanced 911, okay? And with Next Generation 911, there's newer technology evolving constantly. And so while this is an initial investment and a much needed investment, and I think it's money well spent, I think that as being visionaries for our future here in the county and state, as we develop new computer-aided dispatch systems, we should be looking to incorporate some of the various technologies that a vendor is providing to us, and take a look, can we enhance and build into our own system? And I understand the fact of having it nationwide, but that's going to be quite a while. And the other thing is, there will be other vendors that will come aboard as we go forward that will hopefully will be competitive. So as Councilman Weiner said, it's important that businesses like this reach out to National Association of Counties and the city managers, but also to the National Emergency Number Association and the Associated Public Safety Communications Officers. They have committees that have been developed to work on the next generation of 911 nationwide, and this is an invaluable service. I think we need to proceed, move forward, but let's not lose sight that there's a cost, and in a couple years we'll have to renew that cost. And so let's be visionaries to the point where we reach out to Wilmington, Newark, and the state, make this work statewide, and also take a look at our own technology as we enhance it to incorporate some of the futuristic things that Dave and others in the police department would love to see.
We have a couple more that want to speak on this. We're still on the first topic. Council's pleasure, please grant me this. I want to invite the county executive in, get the introductions over with, and then let's get moving.
Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, members of council,
yeah.
I just, things have been going so quickly. I haven't had an opportunity to come in and introduce you to the Chief Administrative Officer. Some of you have met David Moore. My distinguished county attorney, Bernard Pepakot, and we have appointed to finance somewhere around here.
Congratulations.
Fortunate. Really hit today. Oh, I know Chief of Police. I can keep the police right now. Elmer Setting, who's making a phone.
He's reading somebody's rights, I believe.
Yes, he's out there. So I don't know if you guys have any questions you want to ask, or I just wanted to encourage you to come in and tell you where we're at. We're working very hard and trying to make some other decisions. Okay. Come in here or not.
Councilman Bell.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President,
yes.
Members of Council, County Executive. We appreciate the opportunity to meet our new managers, and I think as we've done with prior administrations, we need to send a message to you that we're here, that we play a very important role as legislators of county government, but we look forward to working with each one of you in the future. Each one of you will bring something new to the table, and new personalities, new visions and things. It's a partnership between the administration and council, and I for one, and I doubt if you'll find one around this table that won't say that we welcome working together, working closely. This guy's been around for a long time, and we all know him. We all know what he's capable of. So his history in the county speaks for itself. Ed Milwicki has done a tremendous job for us and will continue to do a tremendous job. They come second to none with Ed Milwicki, but with Mike Coop, we all know him. And congratulations. I think it's a wonderful thing for you and your future and everything, but you've done a tremendous job already in New Castle County.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Councilman Street.
All right.
County Executive.
I was actually going to wait until tonight. Since you're here and since all the all but one member of council's here, I need for you to know, I need for council to know how very, very upset I am about the fact that on Sunday morning, not 50 years ago, Sunday morning, we unleashed a dog from our council manager district, reflected in the news release that we all received, on a 17-year-old female. Now, the question is, and I'm going to raise with you and I'm going to raise with this council. If that 17-year-old female, because she was in a stolen vehicle, and because she failed to adhere to the command of police officer, she ends up in the hospital with dog bites, is she the person, since she did what she did, is it okay in terms of public policy and procedure for us in 2012 to intentionally, not accidentally, intentionally sick a dog on a 17-year-old female? If that's, she deserves what she got because she was riding in a stolen car, if that's our position publicly, in my opinion, it leaves a lot to be desired, and I'm not threatening you, I'm not threatening this council, it's real. Either we as a government are going to not allow this in 2012, and I want to work with you. I'm part of this government. But if our position is because that female was in the car, she deserved to have the dog sicked on her, then if that's our position, then I'll have to seek relief outside of this government, because I, for one, think it's inhumane. I think it's a disgrace. And no longer should the police department in Newcastle County be exempt from scrutiny, be exempt from criticism, and be exempt from a lot of things that the other departments are held to the higher standard of. I'm not going to put up with it. Now, it's up to you. It's up to you, and it's up to us. But in my opinion, to intentionally unleash a dog on a 17-year-old female in 2012 is a shame and a disgrace. And at the end of the day, either we do something about it, or if I'm a Lone Ranger and I got to go it alone, I'll go out standing on my principles, because I think it's wrong.
Thank you, Councilor Chief. Now, Executive, I realize you didn't come in here prepared to address this. I know I stand ready if public safety wants to schedule a special meeting to discuss our canine processes, procedures. I stand ready to attend.
So you can understand it's been a week. I have spoken to Councilman Streets about my feeling. It's under new directions here as of today, and everything is going to be under review, and I'm not happy with a lot of things, and that is also under review. So we're going to make a lot of changes, I can promise you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Back on to R12-170, if you still have comments, Councilman Powers. And Chair wants to recognize the presence of Councilman Taggart. I think we now have four hands.
Harley, and I think it's towards Dave Roberts.
You're in the same club?
The problems we've had, knowing some of it's even John's district, especially down in Mayan, jumping over into other states. I mean, a lot of the cell, we've had problems already jumping to Maryland, jumping over the river to New Jersey.
Yes.
Not having a lot of, what's going to happen then?
Once it comes back into our system, they're transferring the calls back into us. We are working on an interstate agreement between Maryland, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey to be able to transfer the 911 call as a 911 call, not just to a regular 7-digit number. Once we receive it as a 911 call, it'll go out to the system and pull the data back in if it's available.
Even on my personal property, I'm going to jump off the Maryland tower.
Right. The thing is that
and it's a lot of my district, yeah. You know, because I have a lot of the state, most of the Maryland, a couple of the
Once it comes into the 911 system, that's when we send it out to the service and check the number. So if your information is in the database, then we'll get that information to be able to provide it out once it comes back.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
I just wanted to go back to the funding. When you look at this resolution, it talks about the appropriation of $76,000 of other funding, and that would last for 2 years, and then it would have to be picked up within our operating budget. Does that $76,000 cover the purchase, the lease, the installation, everything for those first 2 years, or is this a match where we would actually have to put something into it also?
The answer to that question, Councilwoman, is that the first year is $40,000. That pays for the installation, getting us the software. Year two is $36,000. So that, and then after that, we would be able to, there would be an ongoing cost. About 36.
Okay.
They do have an escalation clause in their contract that we'll be visiting before we sign it. Once we get approval, to be honest with you, I believe that we're going to be the first in the state. We're going to drive this, and with us doing this and putting the money forward initially, the rest of the state's going to end up having to come on board to match where we're at. At that point, I think we can be looking at the 911 service fee that's paid and be able to offshoot that expense to have that paid for through that to another funding source. but I think that it was the intent that we would be able to at least get it up and running, and make sure that it's working for the residents in Newcastle County.
Great. Thank you.
And I'd like to close this out with a comment before I go to the public, and that is because the mayor sat here, took a lot of scrutiny, took a lot of pressure, yelled up. Bottom line is $71,114 of this comes about because of the foresight of Michael Kozakowski, because this comes out of the Recorder of Deeds Technology Fund. Mm-hmm. He was the one that brought this, it put, implemented that, brought it forward as part of the budget through the county. I'm not saying this wouldn't have happened, but that money would have had to come from maybe the 100-year anniversary fund for the police department that's out there. So I think kudos go to Recorder of Deeds in his office for that funding being available.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to make that comment.
And looking, I was going to echo the same comments about Recorder of Deeds providing funding for this initial startup.
In closing, if there's no other questions, I was going to mention that and to thank Mike Kozakowski for putting up that. Thank the sheriffs of public safety for their helping us get this through. Councilman Weiner for his work with the Maroli family, and especially the Maroli family for taking it and working with us to put something in place that really makes it better and safer for the citizens.
Councilman Sheldon.
Just real quick, Chief Roberts, when do you think we can get something in writing to each council person, number one? Number two, when can we, because this is very excitable. Looks like it might, hopefully, we want it to work. It's first of a kind. I mean, the more we get people engaged, the quicker this will.
I believe within the first quarter of next year, we'll have this up and running. If not within the first month, the middle of the month. It's mostly a lot of training and getting the software out there. I believe, and Todd, I don't know what's the normal installation time frame is.
So just to give you a couple of examples, Washington, D.C., much larger in terms of the number of call-taking positions, 2 weeks to get it technically live. Then we did some additional training. Our first in-state in Missouri, which was a little six-seat PSAP, a day. So you'll be somewhere probably in there.
I think the
depends on when they cut the check.
Well, I think that when we cut the check, and it has to go through contract tracking, and I believe the contract then has to come back to council for approval. Once that takes place, once that's done, once that's accomplished, we should be able to have this installed within.
Councilman Bell, my sponsor, I'd like to give you the last comment.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Todd, with that all being said, do you have any idea at this of what it would cost the city of Wilmington or the city of Newark to join in with the county? And I'm not saying it has to be done day one, but there's smaller PSAPs or smaller public safety answering points with default points. But if we had some type of figure, that I think it's incumbent upon the county to reach out immediately to the city and the city of Newark to advise what we're doing, make them aware of what the potential cost would be, because we have a responsibility for all citizens of Newcastle County, including the city of Newark and the city of Wilmington.
The costs are based on the number of call-taking positions. So I don't know the number of call-taking positions in those counties, or in those cities, rather. But what I would be willing to offer, certainly, is Newcastle's been able to purchase at a discounted rate because they have a larger seat count. We'd offer that same discounted rate to the smaller PSAPs.
I think it would be helpful, maybe at a future public safety meeting, if we can. And I know that Chief Roberts can get the information that you would need to give us a ballpark figure, but I'm serious when I say that this thing can impact folks that we're supposed to be protecting. It can impact our operation because of the way calls overlap and default to other centers. And so we have an obligation to bring Newark and Wilmington on board.
And Councilman, we recognize the importance of this being across the whole county, at least for Newcastle County, and across the state. And it is our intention that once we get to go ahead within Newcastle County, we will be meeting with the City of Wilmington, Newark Police, and also the University of Delaware, where there's a very large population that you find a lot of these systems are already installed in universities. So I don't see, I think that once they see us taking the lead, that they will join in with us. And
well, it's a lot easier when you invite somebody in and let them see the monitor when a call comes in.
Right. Yes.
I would be happy to reach out to the city of Newark and to talk to some folks there, particularly the new city manager, who I think would be very receptive. So.
I believe they all will be once they get the opportunity. I honestly believe that, you know, with this council taking the step that it takes and approving this, that it's going to have everyone else looking at it and wanting to provide the same service to their citizens also.
If you talk to Newark, maybe talk to Greater Newark. Or you only talk
I will talk to Greater.
I'll talk to Greater.
You can
Newark.
Have the Greater place.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
R12-171, approving reissuance of certain bonds or notes by the Holloway Terrace Fire Company. Councilman Bell, Councilman Street.
As per title, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions from any members of council? Any questions from the public? Moving right along. Ordinances 12-113, amend the annual operating budget, reduce the Department of Community Services FY2013 operating budget by $64,800 in order to provide funding towards the summer recreation camps grants. Councilwoman Dillon.
Yes, I'd like to consider 12-113 and -114 together.
Any objections? Okay, so moved.
As you can see, if you take a look at the decrease in contractual services and you flip to the next page, you can see that $64,800 is going into the fund for scholarships for the summer camp, for Newcastle County summer camps. So both of these need to be passed in order to make sure that we have the money available for scholarships for the summer camps. And we're entering that period of trying to recruit kids for those camps.
I'm freezing my buns off during summer camps. I love it. Any questions from any members of council? Questions from any members of the public? Okay, hearing none. 12-115, amend the grants budget, carry forward federal funding of $1,327,038.69 from the FY2012 Community Development Block Grant to the FY2013 Community Development Block Grant, administered by the Department of Community Services. Councilwoman Diller.
Per title, this is just carryover from one grant year to the next.
Rather than give it back. Any questions from any members of council? Questions from any members of the public? Hearing none. 12-116, amend the grants budget, appropriate $40,500 of U.S. Department of Agriculture and Rural Development funds to the Garfield Computer Lab grant. Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm certain that since this is the Garfield Park computer lab program that we're trying to enhance in this Councilman Street's district, so I just assume that he also wants to be a co-sponsor on this. The only other thing I would point out is that this grant is from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, and it's not very often we get those grants. We've talked about it quite a bit, but this is somewhat unique, and I think it could be a beginning for other opportunities to look at this resource to support some of our programs in the county. You know, the Councilman Bell and Councilman Powers has talked about this particular resource for some time, but now we're seeing it come to fruition. I don't consider Garfield Park to be exactly agriculture, but at least it's being considered for this grant, so it's a good start.
I don't consider my neighborhood agriculture either, but some of the stuff they've been finding growing now, I don't know. Any questions from any members of council? Questions from Councilman Cartier?
I just want to pay a compliment to folks in community services for pursuing, you know, this grant opportunity, and it's not a rural area, but you know, if we can get the grant money, it'll make it, that green will do a lot of good there.
Anything from the main members of council? Anything from the public? Hearing none. 12-117, amend the grants budget, carry over federal funding of $1,519,215.89 from the FY2012 home program grant to the FY2013 home program grant. Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, as stated on the title, the Carry Forward Program is our normal process when we're ending the year to make certain that we're consistent with our ability to put the money on the street. So this is the home program, which is a part of CDBG, which allocates funding for rehabilitation, acquisition, and administration, and this particular grant will designate to rehabilitate homes.
Any questions from any members of council? Questions from the public? Okay, seeing none, 12-118 has already been reviewed by Councilman Bell with the accompanying legislation. 12-119, amend the grants budget, appropriate federal housing funding in the amount of $17,291,611 to the Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Program for 2013. Councilman Hall.
Mr. Chair, it's $17 million to support housing vouchers for the 1,800 vouchers that we supply here in Newcastle County government. It's not, in fact, address the greater need, but, you know, this is our amount that is allotted, and someone questioned me yesterday about providing more funding for the homeless, but this is for very low-income families, and we still have a waiting list, but this is about as good as we can do with the money that we have. The only other point I would like to make with the ordinances that were introduced by my co-chair, Councilwoman Diller, where these funds are for the summer youth scholarship camp, where a lot of the kids in our county need some assistance to participate in these programs. One of the ordinances also has to do with down payment settlement help, which is HUD funded for first-time home buyers. And then finally, we have the $17 million for the Section 8 vouchers for very low-income families. And I say that because all of these dollars are, in fact, federal dollars. These are HUD dollars. And at 3 o'clock, HUD representatives will be here to talk about the funding that Newcastle County receives from HUD and the mandates that come with that funding and the consequences that we don't uphold that mandate. So I would encourage council members to come back at 3 o'clock for community services. We have three representatives from HUD who will be here.
Well, I can find 32 minutes worth of eat-up time if you think it'll keep everybody here. I'm not sure it'd be appreciated, but you do it. Okay. Questions, members of council? Oh, I'm from the public area.
Sorry.
Switch sides on it.
Marcus Henry Hacking, General Manager of Community Services. Thank you, Councilman Hollins, for your comments. I just want to recognize I have some staff here today, Harry Casey, Fran Lucia, and Rob Rizzo, and Jane Rattani. But for Rob, we just found out about a month ago that we've been designated for the 10th year in a row as a high performer by HUD with our Section 8 program. I have to give kudos to my fantastic staff for making that happen for the 10th year in a row. Thank you.
Congratulations. All right. Next, excuse me. Substitute 1 to 12-120, debate penalty on 18 Quail Hollow Drive, tax parcel number 08-024-20079. Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Thank you. This is a case where the property owner realized that they had a penalty and they were confused because they sent their tax payment via certified mail on September 27th, which was prior to the due date. When they started researching the issue, they discovered that the county never received their payment, but because they had a copy of your check in the amount of the tax principal made out to Newcastle County and a certified mail receipt showing the date that they mailed their payment, I believe that they should be able to have the penalty abated on this. And at this time, the principal portion of the tax bill has been paid, and the only balance remaining is the penalty, which is $169.99.
And once again, this is one where they are able to substantiate beyond a doubt that the clear effort was made, it was put in the mail, it was sent.
Yes, and we have the document.
We had the documents.
We have the documentation if anybody
like
wants to
get
it.
The one I had where a gentleman pulled an envelope out of his truck and said, see, I meant to sell it. I've been riding around for 3 weeks. 3 weeks worth of late payment. Okay, any questions from any members of council? Anything from the public? Okay. Substitute 1 to 12-121 to abate penalty on 105 Fox Lane, tax parcel number 09005-00040. Councilwoman Confessor.
Thank you. This is one, I think we've had this one before also, that they paid their taxes in August. They had the correct numeric amount. The bank went by the written amount, which was different than the numeric amount, which meant that they were short by $800 and the penalty was assessed. They again produced the copy of the check, showed that they had the intent to pay the full amount, that the council received the payment prior to the due date, and I'm asking that the fine, the penalty be abated, which is $56.01.
Any questions from any members of council? Questions from the public? Okay, hearing none. Moving on to the grant report. We have none. JK or the L to be heard. Okay, we're moving to the grant. Just so everybody knows, we do have an L on tonight's agenda, but that's for introduction purposes only, so that will be discussed at a later committee meeting. Okay, first, we have the Newark Senior Center, $500 supplement budget for Meals on Wheels. Councilwoman Dillon.
Yes. You know, I have targeted my council grants for the most part to either youth activities or basic needs, and Newark Senior Center, this would provide them with additional funds for their Meals on Wheels program. So I make a motion that we allocate $500 from my grant account.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? I'm not voting. Next on the agenda, Newark Area Welfare Committee, $500 Emergency Assistance Program, Councilwoman Dillon.
Per title.
Okay, there's a motion for $500. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Not voting. Next on the agenda, the Jewish Family Services of Delaware, $1,000 Outpatient Mental Health Counseling, Care Management, and Youth Development, Councilman Warner.
He's not here.
Not here.
Jay, yeah, you want to go get him? We're going to move to council employees' request for shift work hours. Councilman Cartier.
Yes, per our.
Donovan, you can come up doubling his request. Bob, there's a motion on the table for your grants for $2,000 to the Jewish Family Service.
I second
that's it. That's a $1,000 penalty.
Could have that abated, please?
Okay.
Did someone present it?
No.
We're asking you. He's giving
you Brandywine High School.
No.
Jewish Family Service.
Jewish Family Service. Still could be Brandywine High School.
Okay. Jewish Family Service.
Right.
Outpatient Mental Health Counseling, Care Management, Youth and Development. No prior grants. And they meet all of the criteria. They've completed a statement which meets our strict criteria. So I make a motion for $1,000.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Not voting. Okay, Brandywine High School After Prom Committee, $2,500. Youth Activities for After Prom, Councilman Warner.
Yes, this is the second year that they've done this. They comply, or maybe the third, I'm not sure. They comply with all of our standards. And they had to supplement to make sure they're there because these informal groups don't necessarily know how to do these forms. This will keep the kids off the street and help the parents to keep kids from maybe getting killed from drinking or drugs or something that night. So, and Brandywine School District, of course, crosses all sectors, and it's a great activity. I hope that will support this, so I'll make a motion for $2,500.
There's a second.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Not voted. Okay. That concludes the grants portion of our budget, of our agenda. We'll return back to council employees' request for a shift in work hours. Councilman Cartier.
Per our practice, I have my new legislative aide, Brian Hulleiter, who's here in the meeting, is requesting a shift in his work hours starting at 8, ending at 4 o'clock. And we're just bringing that forward for council's consent and acknowledgement.
Any questions from any members of council? Councilman Warren.
Of course, he knows he's on duty 24/7 anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
I feel like I'm going to leave 4 or 5
anyway. I'm just going to comment that if we keep going, we're going to be changing the council shift from 8 to 4 or something.
Should already consider it.
We have a multitude of staff who are on everything but a flex schedule. With that,
There's a motion on the table to adjust the schedule from 8 to 4. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Not voting? I'm sorry, did you want to speak to it and see if you could kill your chances?
Larry didn't know better.
That's good answer. One of my answers. Very good. And you still got a lot of years to go, maybe. Is there anything for the expense and revenue roundtable? Councilman Cordier.
We looked at a lot of the HUD funding issues here in finance today, as well as grants from Department of Agriculture. And I think all of this has to be looked at with a lot of concern. I don't know if the manager of community service want to talk about the fiscal cliff and the other fiscal challenges going on with the federal government, that everything we do at the table here is highly dependent on where Washington goes. So I don't know if you want to offer any comment about that.
That's next.
It impacts.
Sure. Marcus Henry, again, acting general manager of community services. I am personally and my staff are tracking what happens carefully. This deliberation is going to happen in Congress ultimately with our funding. As I state, I don't know if I did state, but we're looking at about 8.4% reduction across the board in our program spending. To be honest with you, most of the programs should be okay and absorb that. The issue is on the Section 8 administration. We're conceivably believe about $1.5 million in federal funds that will not be recovered if they go through with this. Now, Councilman Hollins just shared with me a letter of support in terms from Senator Carper and our delegation, looking that they'll do everything within their power to avoid this fiscal cliff. But having said that, there's a deadline coming up. We're greatly concerned about that. We could, again, maybe organize another letter or some lead some discussion, because we're that concerned, because January 1st is right around the corner. I can answer any questions.
Councilman Hollins.
Yes, to that point, we had a discussion at our last Finance Committee meeting, or one before that, where Councilman Street and Councilman Kilpatrick expressed their concerns about what is called sequestering. And that's when I signed the letter to go to the congressional delegation. And Senator Carper did respond last week. So every council member should have received an email stating that this letter is in their mailbox to tell us exactly what's going on in Congress and what our senator is trying to do. If we didn't get it, we can certainly get another.
And I want to thank you for continuing to be willing to sign things. Councilman Cordier.
I think, just again, to remind members of council, the total salary overhead paid for by federal government funds is approximately $1.7 million in the Community Services Department. Is that correct?
Give or take, yeah. I mean, federally funded employees are about 35 and a half. Employees are affected with our federal funds and salary and benefits and others. So, you know, it's the initial concern what happens January 1st, but it's also ongoing what happens. Right. And I also need to mention, in this negotiation that may happen, they may very well reduce these funds anyway in terms of entitlement spending. So that's a concern as well. So we're just going to keep monitoring this issue.
President Bullock.
I want to commend you on your good work and continue to keep us informed of what's happening in Washington, how it impacts the county, and working with Councilman Hollins and Ms. Dillard, Councilwoman Dillard. Just want to commend you to keep us in the loop.
Thank you. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
And I will take this opportunity to be my usual bring people down self and just say, while I recognize the position that Washington's in with the fiscal cliff and the adverse effects it can have on us, behooves each of us at this table to remember that we as a county have yet to come back from the cliff that we continue to teeter on with the cost of ever rising of this county and the limited funding sources that we have. So we owe it to everyone out there to continue to be vigilant of the expenses in Newcastle County as we move forward, just in our daily operations. That's it. Anything else for Councilman Street? And then we will go to the audience.
Financial. The 17-year-old that we intentionally put the dog on, that went to the hospital, that'll have to have medical follow-up. Whose bill is that?
Well, I think you need to talk to legal, and I understand your concern, Councilman Street, but I'm here running a finance committee. And that's what I'm speaking. I'm not disregard for that.
It's a genuine financial.
That would go to the law department, and we can invite them in to speak. I mean, listen, I sympathize with you. I got a brother that got caught riding in the car. He didn't get bit. He got 3 years. Well. Anything else for expense and revenue roundtable? Anything under other? President Bullock, and then we'll go to.
Mr. Chairman, I want to introduce my legislative aide to the council and to the other aides who have not met him, Anthony DeFore. He will serve at, in this capacity. He's an outstanding young man, was my deputy campaign manager. The campaign will be graduating in a couple of weeks, University of Delaware, political science. He's interned with the state chamber and economic development in the city of Wilmington with our dear friend Joe Pinto. So I want to introduce him to everybody, and let's welcome him to the team.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome. Mr. Milowicki.
As the announcement earlier, this is my last meeting as CFO, so I want to thank council for the past 5 years for all their help and support. I especially want to thank the finance co-chairs during that time. Councilwoman Diller was council finance chair when I first came on board. Councilman Smiley and Councilman Cartier are the newer folks. But again, thank you for all your help and support over the past 5 years. As CFO, I think we've made some tough decisions. We've made some right decisions. But again, thank you very much.
I want to thank you for your dedication, your due diligence, and above all, your scrutiny and continual supplementing of this council with the financial data that we needed. Councilman Cartier.
I just want to compliment Ed Milowicki. When he came into this role, he's brought nothing but clarity to this council, making the county's finances plainly understandable to this body, and I think he helps us fulfill our oversight role. He's been a great aid to us, and I wish him the best of success in continuing employment with us.
Okay, we're going to go. Collins, Bell, Miner. And I really hope this doesn't mean you're leaving.
You wanted to make it to 3 o'clock.
You said you wanted to go to 3
o'clock. Let's show a hand.
Rinda, Tara, Molly. Gavin, I hope this doesn't mean you're leaving and you didn't know it. Gavin, off.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just felt to be remiss if I didn't express my appreciation to Ed as well. I mean, the amount of information that we've requested from finance has been voluminous. I mean, we asked for all kinds of stuff, and Ed has always provided it. Sometimes I even thought that we're going too far, but in any case, Ed was always there with the information that we requested, so I really appreciate what you've done, and good luck in the future.
Councilman Bell.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And I think we all have a sense of knowing Ed. I've known Ed a long, long time. Ed, yeah, a long, long time in county government, and I can tell you that not only a good family person and a gentleman, but in the future years to come, Ed Milowicki will still be here with us. Ed Milowicki is a team player, and Ed Milowicki will still share his institutional knowledge and expertise with our new manager. That's the type of person we have in Ed Milowicki.
I guess you'd have the same talk with him I did. Catherine White.
I second all the things that my fellow council members have said. Just want to add my personal thanks to Ed. Looking forward to working with our new general manager. And to say that not only did Ed provide us the information, but it was always with a sense of calmness and a good sense of humor and lightness that can take down the tensions when we're discussing these issues. That makes a big difference. And when each one of us has had the personal constituent that just doesn't say accept no for an answer, Ed will go the extra mile and explain in communications for us, you know, why this constituent needs to understand this is our position. That makes a big difference. I want to thank you.
Okay. I believe Mr. Coop wants to
speak. I may say one last word. The CFO position, everything that Ed has done for years will continue on, obviously. One thing I'd like to say that you probably don't know is Ed and I both started in Kessel County back on December 1977. So we've been working together for 35 years, and obviously with Ed's help and everything will continue to be seamless. Everything will be fine. We will continue to work. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Thanks
for sure. I appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Council. I just wanted to express my appreciation for being here today as your new county attorney, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say a few words just to express my eagerness to work with each and every one of you. I look forward to interacting with you. Several of you I've already had relationships and have worked with you in the past, and I look forward to working with the rest of you who I've not had the opportunity to do so with. So please feel free at any time to reach out should you have a need of my assistance or the law department's assistance in any way, and I just want to make sure that you know that I am always available to you.
I'm sure you'll be defending us in due time. Any other members of council? Questions? Anything from the public? Okay. Well, I'd like to talk to you for the next 14 minutes about a couple things that have been calling. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed, please be back at 3 o'clock for a very interesting meeting.